Is South Africa supplying weapons to Russia?
Arming of Russia by South Africa with the vessel that landed in Simonstown is fundamentally unacceptable.
Plus, a look at what's needed to boost confidence in investing in Ukraine's economy.
Currently, there aren't a lot of private insurers, international insurers, that are willing to insure new investments or insure assets in Ukraine.
And later in the program, we head to Kharkiv to hear about the forced displacement of children. Today is Friday, May 12th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. A war of words is brewing between the United States and South Africa. This after the U.S. ambassador to the country said that he would, quote, bet his life on the U.S. intelligence report that South African weapons were loaded onto a Russian vessel when it docked at a Cape Town naval base in December. The South African government hit back, saying that while it would investigate the matter, the U.S. ambassador's remarks had undermined the relationship between the two nations. Kate Bartlett has more from Johannesburg.
Pretoria summoned U.S. Ambassador Reuben Brigitte on Friday amid a diplomatic spat that has put relations between the two friendly nations at their lowest ebb in years. The demarche was issued after Brigitte's extraordinarily strident comments to South African media on Thursday, in which he said the U.S. had observed South African weapons being loaded onto a Russian vessel, the Lady R, which docked at the port of Simonstown in Cape Town between December 6 and December 8 last year. He said it showed South Africa was not neutral on the Ukraine conflict, as Pretoria has always claimed.
Arming of Russia by South Africa with the vessel that landed in Simonstown is fundamentally unacceptable. We are confident that weapons were loaded onto that vessel, and I would bet my life on the accuracy of that assertion.
The South African government seemed caught by surprise by the ambassador's comments, responding hours later that they were setting up an independent investigation into the matter led by a retired judge. But Vincent Magwenya, a spokesman for President Cyril Ramaphosa, also hit back at Brigitte's remarks, saying the U.S. and South Africa had already discussed the matter privately.
It is therefore disappointing that the U.S. ambassador has adopted a counterproductive public posture that undermines the understanding reached on the matter.
A spokesman for the Department of International Relations and Cooperation said Friday that Minister Naledi Pandor would also be speaking to her U.S. counterpart, Secretary of State Antony Blinken. However, Corbis Murray, Shadow Defense Minister for South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance, said the U.S. accusations were deeply concerning.
If these allegations are indeed true, it would be a gross violation of South Africa's international obligations and a betrayal of the trust of our most important trade and investment allies.
There have long been questions surrounding why the ship docked in Cape Town last year. Despite Western efforts to get Pretoria's support for Kyiv since the Russian invasion began last year, the South African government has maintained friendly relations with Moscow. The country's foreign minister held bilateral talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov earlier this year and, despite U.S. consternation, hosted Russian warships in February for joint military exercises. Stephen Grused, a Russia expert at the South African Institute of International Affairs, told VOA that Pretoria could face economic fallout from its stance.
South Africa is jeopardizing its access to the American market through something like the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. Those privileges could be revoked, and then there would be real economic cost.
South Africa also has invited Russian President Vladimir Putin to attend a summit in the country in August, despite the fact there's an arrest warrant out for him by the International Criminal Court and Pretoria is a signatory to the court. If he shows up, South Africa is legally obliged to arrest him. This has led to calls by some within the ruling party to look into restructuring the agreement with the ICC. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Britain is reportedly preparing to designate the Wagner Group, the Russian private army that is deeply involved with the invasion of Ukraine, as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the United States are debating similar moves that would put the group within the same bracket as the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Russia's Wagner Group, a private army, is spearheading much of the fighting for the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. Many of its mercenaries have been recruited from Russian prisons. Wagner is blamed for widespread atrocities in Ukraine, torturing and killing prisoners of war and civilians, including children, accusations it denies. Members of the group, including its leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, are already subject to US, European Union, and British sanctions. Wagner operates closely with the Russian state. It opened this military technology center in St. Petersburg last year. Britain has been building a legal case to designate Wagner as a terrorist organization, according to the Times of London newspaper. Belonging to or promoting Wagner or even displaying its logo would become a criminal offence. Tanya Mera is from the International Centre for Counterterrorism in The Hague.
It may deter companies maybe to do business with Wagner, but it's doubtful what effect it will have because Wagner is getting their financial resources not so much from Europe, but from their activities that they are carrying out, their illegal activities in Africa. So what could be the benefits? Yeah, it is maybe more symbolic.
Wagner mercenaries have operated in Syria and several African countries, including Libya, the Central African Republic, Mali and Sudan, typically offering governments security services in return for access to mineral wealth and support for Russia's geopolitical aims. In March 2022, around 300 civilians died in an attack on the Malian town of Moura, which was then controlled by jihadist forces. Speaking at the time, witnesses accused Malian forces and Russian Wagner fighters of summary executions, which Mali denied. Amadou, who ran a stall in Moura and declined to give his family name, told Reuters the Malian army came with a lot of white men. We can call them Russians. They didn't understand one another. They took 15 to 20 people. They lined them up about 100 meters from us. They made them kneel down and they shot them. The French Parliament voted Tuesday to designate the Wagner Group as a terrorist entity in a non-binding resolution, adding pressure on the European Union to take action. In Washington, a bipartisan group of lawmakers is pushing for the United States to classify Wagner as a foreign terrorist organization. The U.S. Attorney General said in March he would not object to the move.
In the U.S., if they would be designated as a terrorist group, it would have the most far-reaching consequences, as anyone who would be providing material support to the Wagner Group could also face criminal prosecution. So that would mean that states or certain government officials from African states who would be engaging with Wagner could be liable for criminal prosecutions.
The Times report said Britain could designate Wagner as a terrorist group within weeks. The British government declined to comment. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Previously on this program, we met Tvorchi, Ukraine's entrant to the 2023 Eurovision Song Contest. One Ukrainian who won't be making an appearance at the show is President Volodymyr Zelensky. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has that story.
The European Song Contest has barred Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky from addressing the final of the pan-continental music competition. Zelensky had been expected to use a video address on Saturday to urge the world continue its support for Ukraine's fight to repel Russian invasion. Now, the European Broadcasting Union says letting Zelensky participate would breach the non-political nature of the event. Overtly political lyrics, signs and symbols are banned at Eurovision, but politics can't be shut out entirely. Russia was banned from the contest after it had invaded Ukraine last year. Last year's contest was won by Ukraine, and the UK has now stepped in to host on its behalf. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. A look at the ongoing negotiations to renew the Black Sea Grain Initiative and President Zelensky's potential travel abroad. First, though, Zelensky announces some military successes in the East. I'm joined by our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
President Zelensky had a general staff meeting with top military officials and generals. He confirmed in terms of the Eastern front line, he also confirmed that Ukrainian forces had certain advances and certain success. As we already discussed previously, we had confirmation of Ukrainian forces advancing at least 2 kilometers in the area of Bakhmut. President Zelensky did not specify the success areas. He just said that it's eastern direction and that the work is very active and the work is ongoing.
Now, I also understand that there are some rumors in Kyiv that President Zelensky might be taking another trip abroad soon. Any word on where he might be going and what he'll be doing?
Yes, these rumors are coming from Italian media, and it looks like, at least according to what Italian media is saying, that potentially he might visit Italy tomorrow on May 13, which is Saturday. And if this turns out true, it would have been quite an important visit because historically Italy had a lot of pressure from Russia and it's especially in its political environment and quite a strong lobby, Russian lobby in Italy. But again, recently we see enormous support from Italian officials and from Italy in general. And additionally, there is a rumor that President Zelensky might have a meeting with the Pope, which is also quite interesting because we've heard that Pope was talking a lot about the war in Ukraine, and he is also conducting prayers for Ukraine, and he is trying to help as much as he can. This is according to what he said in some of his statements.
And another topic is the Ukrainian grain deal that would allow Ukraine to export its grain and agricultural products through the Black Sea, a deal with Russia, Turkey and Ukraine. That's up for renewal soon. How are the negotiations going?
I can say that there were 2 days meeting in Turkey with Turkey, Ukraine, Russia and UN representatives. So according to Turkish representative, he said that grain negotiations are getting to certain agreement and it might be prolonged. But again, according to Ukrainian representative, the negotiation has moved to the online format, and also there are still things to discuss. Yesterday, Russian officials had a statement saying that there are certain things that Russia wants for this deal to happen, and this is like things that are not negotiable. So it's really difficult to say if this was a successful today's meeting. But at least we see that negotiations are ongoing, and there are certain negotiation points that all sides accept and kind of talk over. So, but again, we don't have a lot of details.
Something we'll certainly be keeping our eyes on. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Rights groups have called for action against the forced displacements of tens of thousands of Ukrainian children to Russia, but for some Ukrainian families, these alleged crimes are only part of the complex web of violence they must navigate to survive during the war. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Kharkiv.
In February 2022, Russia took over Irina Grinchenko's town in the Kharkiv region of Ukraine overnight. "We woke up and Russia was in charge," she says. Battles continued, and Russian authorities told parents that children could be evacuated to faraway camps where they would play in the sun and study. Grinchenko says she wanted her children to rest from the war, make new friends, and play in the sea. She thought the children would be gone for 24 days, but weeks turned into months, and one day she woke up again to find Ukraine had retaken her town. The de facto border had moved, and now she was effectively in a different country than her daughters. She says relatives in Poland told her that if she didn't retrieve her children right away, she may not be able to get them out of Russia. Grinchenko sought help from a group, Save Ukraine, that helps parents travel a long and complex route from Ukraine to Russia to individually reclaim their children. Ukrainian authorities say Russia has taken more than 19,000 children from occupied or formerly occupied Ukraine. Fewer than 400 are known to have returned home. Officials say one purpose is to indoctrinate children and erase their Ukrainian identity. This is Mykola Kuleba, the head of Save Ukraine.
They force them to sing Russian songs, Russian anthem, to go to Russian schools. They have special classes where they brainwash them. They tell them all time bad things about Ukraine, that you will never go back. Nobody from Ukraine needs you, your parents or your country. Forget about it. We can give you Russian citizenship and you will be happy here.
In March, the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for Russian President Vladimir Putin and Maria Lvova-Belova, the Russian Commissioner for Children's Rights, for the unlawful deportation of Ukrainian children to Russia. Lvova-Belova says the children were rescued for humanitarian reasons and calls the criminal accusations a conspiracy. Moscow denies abducting children, saying they have been transported away for their own safety. Lvova-Belova has vowed to continue to take children out of conflict areas. For children returning to Ukraine, the homecoming is bittersweet. Grinchenko's 12-year-old daughter, Nastya, says she didn't expect to see such destruction at home. She says in Russia, the teachers were kind and taught them local history, but not about the war at home. In late April, the Council of Europe published a draft resolution calling for action against the forced displacements of Ukrainian children to Russia, including orphans, children with disabilities, children accompanied by parents, and children taken for holidays from which they have never returned. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Kharkiv Region, Ukraine.
Many large investors are nervous about investing in Ukraine, but that's what's needed for the country to support itself through the war and rebuild after it. Romina Bandura is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She says that new types of insurance policies and providers could help mitigate the risk for investors and help Ukraine grow.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, and within, you know, insurance or let's say a broader risk mitigation tools, you have different types, right? And then and different types of insurance, and you have different types of institutions that offer that insurance. And currently, there aren't a lot of private insurers, international insurers that are willing to, you know, insure new investments or insure assets in Ukraine. So that is, you know, a barrier. Now we have these institutions called multilateral development banks, and we have bilateral development agencies, and we have development finance institutions. So these are like institutions that are created to help, sort of bridge the public between, the public and private sectors. So these are institutions like, you might have heard the World Bank, and within the World Bank, you have a very specialized institution called MIGA, which provides insurance and is, and it has pilots in Ukraine, and, they use this money to really help, investors bring investments into Ukraine. You have other institutions like the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development that is also piloting these programs. And so there is some movement. It's just that, the scale of the magnitude of the challenge is too big.
So what needs to happen other than the war ending?
At CSIS, what we proposed was that these, development finance institutions and bilateral development agencies get together and establish like a big pool of war insurance so that investors feel more comfortable, to either, invest or take loans that are backed by this, pool. And again, it doesn't have to be huge investments. I'm going to give you examples. There are companies that are investing in Ukraine currently. So Unilever, there's an Irish company called Kingspan that is opening up a construction tech hub in Lviv. Uber is expanding. So these are, already established multinationals, but for maybe companies that are curious about and want to help Ukraine, I think this pool, a pool where different, donors and multilateral agencies work together would be really, I think, a good first step. And again, it doesn't have to be, very big investments. Remember that, we need to support the Ukrainian economy as much as we can so that, people can keep jobs or there can be more jobs in the future. So that's a little bit, our proposal.
Romina Bandura is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Ms. Bandura, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
That'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
America, Washington. Z-T-C.